a common belief that people have is they really have to want to quit smoking before they're really going to have any great chance of succeeding, or basically any chance of succeeding. That a person who doesn't want to quit smoking, well, they just can't quit smoking. It's not really always a true statement. There are people who sometimes have no intention of quitting who will quit smoking. Sometimes it's because of tragic situations. Sometimes they're being diagnosed with things and now the reality sets in and they still don't want to do it, but they realize they have to do it. Although when people quit out of fear, they'll often have a very hard time succeeding over a long term, because if they leave fear as their only mechanism for quitting, well, the fear is going to wear off. I mean, sooner or later, the problem is going to resolve, and then they're just going to forget the initial reaction they have when they realize that maybe their life was right now on the line if they didn't quit smoking. But some people quit, not out of fear, but other conditions that happen. I'm going to relate a story about one man who really did not want to quit smoking, had no intention of quitting smoking, and yet ended up in a smoking clinic, although it was a clear-cut case, doesn't happen to many people, where he ended up in that clinic where he had no intention of being in this clinic and didn't have a choice out of it. What happened is I was asked to run a stop smoking clinic for an insurance company in Evanston. And it was at a time where companies weren't smoke-free yet. They weren't restricting smoking in any areas. But there were some companies that were recognizing employees really shouldn't be smoking. They weren't going to enforce anything on them, but they knew that it was bad for their employees to smoke on a couple of levels. One, it was bad for the health of the employees. That was obvious. But you know what? I think most companies knew that. But some companies recognized that it was also bad financially for the company because smokers cost them more money. This company happened to be an insurance company, and when I thought back to it now, a lot of the company clinics that I was being asked to do back in the days where there weren't a lot of companies doing clinics, they were insurance companies. Insurance companies recognized the implication of smoking employees. Again, bottom line dollars, and they knew it was hurting their bottom line as well as hurting their employees. So insurance companies were interested in smoking cessation probably before a lot of other industries. Well, this one insurance company, the management realized they wanted to do a stop smoking clinic, and now they needed to find out what was available and bring a clinic in for their employees. The management goes to human resources, and the man who was in charge of human resources was a chain smoker who had no intention, no desire to quit smoking. And now management is telling him, we want you to bring in a program in for employees to quit smoking. We want you, you know, to get people into this program. We want you out promoting this program. And the man's name was Joe, and Joe basically tried to lay it out very clearly to management that he really wasn't interested in this particular project because he was a smoker. He did not want to quit smoking. He has no interest in quitting smoking. At that point, Joe said he loved smoking. Joe said if he had a choice between giving up smoking and his firstborn, he'd miss the kid. You know, smoking was important to Joe. And his boss had told him, you know, we're not asking you to quit smoking. We just want you to find what programs are available. We want you to bring the program in that you think is the best program, and we want you to get employees into this clinic. Joe reluctantly agrees. Well, he has no choice. This is his job description. This is his position in the company. He needs to be doing this. So Joe researches programs in the area. He finds us. He promotes the program to employees. He's going for almost person to person, trying to get people to realize we're bringing in this program. If you have any interest in quitting smoking, you should consider coming to this program. Joe must have been a pretty good salesperson because he got a lot of people into this clinic. So now, the day of the clinic starts. The companies, when I was doing company clinics back then, the companies kind of had to pay a deposit in advance, and then they would pay for the rest of the clinic at the completion of the clinic. And we did that to make sure that they would get enough employees in for us to do the program. It was the type of thing we had a lot of companies who said, oh, they want us to come in, they want us to come in. We'd lock out two weeks, and we get there, and nobody was there. So we put in protective measures to make sure that wasn't going to happen. So Joe does his job. He gets people in that room. He sets up the projector for us. He gets all the material, you know, helps me set up the chairs and how I want them to be. He's greeting the people as they come in, and you know, there's always the trepidation of all the new people coming in the first day of a clinic who are scared of what they're getting into, and Joe in a way was putting them at relative ease, you know, to welcoming them in. And then Joe introduces me, and he tells, you know, that he's researched, he found this program, and we're very successful, and you know, he wishes everybody luck. And then what happens is he introduces me, he turns it over to me, and then he says bye to the group. Well, all of a sudden, one of the people in the group looked at him and said, "Joe, where are you going?" And Joe says, "No, I'm done. You know, I've done my job." And he was saying, "Joe, you're a chain smoker. What do you mean you're done? Where are you going?" He says, "Well, I'm not quitting smoking." And again, Joe says, "You know, I love smoking. You know, if I have a choice between go smoking my first board, I'm missing the kid." I mean, Joe repeated what he said to his manager. Well, the man got irate because, as far as he was concerned, Joe twisted his arm to come into this program. And he was not the only man who felt this way. Everyone in the clinic was, like, in shock because the man who was out promoting, pulling everybody into this program, is now leaving, probably to go have a cigarette for all practical purposes. And they were mad. They were really mad. And they said, "If you walk out of this program, we're going with you. We're not staying in this program." Now, Joe's in a bind here. He knows he was given the job to get us into the company. He knows about the deposit. He knows that this clinic is now about to totally fall apart. And if anyone in management asks why did the clinic fall apart, it's going to basically be said by everybody because Joe left. So Joe's in the bind here. He ends up joining the clinic. Now you got to understand, this man had no intention up to this moment in time of quitting smoking. And keep in mind, the rule of our clinic is if you take a puff anywhere along the way, you're out of the clinic. So Joe is in a real bind here. He was probably hoping that everybody else would fail first and then he could just go back and he could just blame it on the clinic. Well, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, Joe joins the clinic, but he has a miserable attitude. And again, when you get a person quitting who doesn't want to quit smoking, their attitude is lousy. If you quit smoking or with a lousy attitude, you're going to have a lousy time. I don't care what withdrawal is or isn't. If you have a lousy attitude, you're going to have a lousy time. If you quit with a good attitude, well, you might have a lousy time, but at least you'll have a good attitude about it. Joe had a lousy attitude. And everything went wrong that Joe was touching for the first few days, to the level of, on the third day of the clinic, so now he was off for about 48 hours, he was leaving his house, and he very rarely drove his car to work, and for some reason this day he had to take his car. He slammed his finger in the car door, and it basically was a broken finger. Joe was in terrible pain, terrible misery. He manages, though, to drive to the emergency room of a hospital. And now as he's in the emergency room, they're trying to get him to sign all these forms, but Joe's in pain, and he can't, you know, he couldn't use his hand, he couldn't sign, and he's getting really, really frustrated. They're making him wait too long, and he's in pain, and he can't sign, and he can't do the things he's supposed to do. And he got really frustrated at the nursing, or at the reception station, where they're basically triaging him, and he says, "I'll be right back." And Joe had decided he couldn't do this anymore. He had to smoke. This was just too much. He didn't care about the job anymore. I mean, this is where he was at. He went down the hall to where there's a cigarette machine. This is back in the days when there were cigarette machines in hospitals. He's reaching into his pocket, trying to get the change. But the problem is, it was his right hand that had the broken finger. His change is in his right hand pocket. He's trying to get in with the broken finger. He can't do it. Now he's trying to get in with his left hand into the pocket. And it's so awkward that he ends up spilling the money that he had in his pocket. He was putting some of it into the machine already, and now he didn't have enough to finish off the transaction. And some of the money rolled under the machine, and now he's on the floor trying to get under the machine. He couldn't get it. He finally got so furious, he kicked the machine. He hurt his foot. It wasn't bad enough to be, you know, it wasn't broken or anything, but this guy was in pain on there. Well, finally, he gave up, and he went back because he knew he had to go back to the nurse's station. He needed to get, you know, he needed to get the finger started to be worked at. Anyway, he gets through the situation. He was lucky. He never got the change. He never got to the cigarette. He got through it. He was miserable when he came in that day of the clinic. I mean, Joe was miserable every day when he came in. Again, he didn't want to quit smoking, but he pulled it off. And again, his reason for not wanting to quit smoking was he really liked smoking. I mean, he believed that. He believed that wholeheartedly. He loved being a smoker. He eventually, things eased up for him. Things started to get better, and he stayed off. He actually succeeded. He never really felt he gained anything by quitting. You know, he did it under duress, but he quit. Well, it was a few months later. was looking out his window where he lived. He lived on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, on the south side, but on Lakeshore Drive. He had a clear view of the jogging trails that run along the lake. And he used to see these people running out there all the time, and he was thinking, what nuts? You know, Joe was a couch potato. He had no interest in running, no interest in exercising. He'd watch these people out there, and he just thought that they were out of their mind. Now, these were health nuts. And he's watching these people now, and he's thinking, you know, he should go see what this is all about. So he bought himself some running shoes, and he went and he started to walk the trail. And he actually realized he kind of liked it. This was kind of pleasant. He actually took up jogging, and then within a matter of a few months, he's doing 5K races. He really enjoyed this running. He never believed he would have done that, but he really liked the running. Then another thing he realizes, he has this car. He hated his car. He despised his car. He lived in a place where parking is close to impossible, and he didn't have an assigned parking place. He said whenever he'd get his car parked, he didn't want to move it for anything. He only used the car every few weeks. He would go shopping, because shopping was a few blocks away, and he couldn't walk a few blocks when he was smoking, so he needed this car to really do his shopping. And then every now and then, strange things would come up that he'd have to use the car. But it was a terrible inconvenience, because he knew once he moved the car, he didn't know he was going to get a parking place again. Well, after he started doing this running and this jogging, all of a sudden he realized if he could jog 5 miles, he could walk a few blocks to a store. He could do trips back and forth if he needs to carry more stuff. And he realized he doesn't need this car. And he sold his car. And he was thrilled. He really didn't want this car anymore. He was done, you know, driving in the city at this point. He started to notice lots of little benefits of not smoking. And he really came to the conclusion. He realized he really likes not smoking. He never thought that would happen, but it did occur. Joe became a panelist for me. And what he would do on these panels, and what I do with all people who graduate the clinic, I invite them in if they want to come serve on panels in future clinics, to let people know what it was like for them when they were smoking, how they quit, what it was like when they quit, what it's like now. And Joe would come in on these panels, and he would talk about how much he loved smoking when he was a smoker, how he quit smoking, how miserable it was, how he was convinced he loved smoking until he quit smoking, and all of a sudden he realized he really liked not smoking. It was really a kind of pleasant way of life now, and he was real happy about this. You know, he really was an enthused ex-smoker. Joe comes into a clinic I'm doing, and this is a year or so after he quits. It's a January clinic. It was about the third week in January when the clinic was starting, and Joe comes in, and he tells his story on this particular panel, and he talks about, again, how much he smoked, how much he loved smoking, how he quit smoking. He talked about those stories about the emergency room. He told his normal routine. But then when he got to the end, he says, "There's something I have to tell you," and he's talking to the group now. He said, "Joel doesn't want me to tell you this. Joel doesn't know. I haven't told him." He said, "I took a cigarette New Year's Eve. I know it was a dumb thing to do." He's very apologetic about it. He said, "I was a little bit drunk at the time. I didn't know what I was doing. All of a sudden, I realized I had a cigarette with me. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, this is terrible." He put out the cigarette, and again, extremely apologetic. And, you know, and he said, you know, it happened. He won't do it again. Now, with the group here, I'm looking at Joyce and Joe. You're lucky you're not smoking right now. You know, most people who do what Joe did, they're smoking very quickly. Well, this was 3 weeks later, and Joe hadn't smoked. And Joe says, no, he knows, he understands. He's been to enough clinics where he saw people. He saw panels come and talk about how they had relapsed in the past, and he recognized, you know, what he had done. He sees people in the clinic who he'd seen before, and maybe in the clinic or two before that, who lost those quits because they took a puff. He said, no, I've seen enough people who go back to smoking. I know you can't do this. And I realized he was right there. He does have that observation. He has that on his side. I said, you better be careful right here. You can't think you're going to get away with this kind of thing again. He said, no, I know. Never again. It won't happen. He comes to every clinic, I think, I did that year. And I was doing clinics every month, sometimes every 2 months. And Joe would come in the clinic and tell his panel story of how much he loved smoking, how hard it was for him to quit, how wonderful it is not to smoke now. And then when you get to the end, he would say, oh, there's a story Joel doesn't want me to tell you, but, you know, I feel I have to be honest. I took a cigarette New Year's Eve. I'll never do it again. And for the first few months, very apologetic, very contrite about it. And you could tell, you know, he was sincere. When he came to my November clinic, he's doing a panel. He's telling his normal story. Then he gets to the end. And he says, oh, there's a story I got to tell you. Joel doesn't want me to tell you this, but I took a cigarette New Year's Eve. Oh, it'll never happen again. It was a dumb thing to do. The difference now, he was saying probably the same words he'd said in the other programs, but the difference was he was gloating about it. He was mocking it. It was this big joke to him now. You know, it's like it was really no longer a big deal. It was no longer a threat. It was a dumb thing that happened, but he'll never do it again. And again, I looked at Joe and said, Joe, you're lucky you're not smoking right now. He said, oh, no, I know. But again, in a mocking sort of way. I called Joe up 2 days before New Year's. I said, Joe, we're going to be New Year's Eve. He starts laughing. He says, yeah, I know. You think I'm going back to smoke? I said, listen, I'm having a party at my house. I invited all non-smokers. Even if I want one, I can't get one. I'm safe. And I figured, okay, he put some planning into this. He realized there was a risk here. So he's thought about it. And, you know, hopefully Joe's okay. Joe calls me up New Year's Day. And there's a panic in his voice. What's your next clinic? And I said, what happened? He said, oh, one of my friends brought two friends. One of them smoked. He bummed a cigarette from that friend. He was hooked. He came to the next clinic. He did not get off smoking. He came to two more clinics during that year. He did not quit smoking. He finally quit on his own in November. It took him 11 months to get off. That first cigarette he took that first New Year's Eve hooked him. Oh, it took 365 days to do it, but it hooked him. It set up the precedent that if things ever got really bad or really good, or again, it got very specific, if it's New Year's Eve and a cigarette comes around, oh, I can have that and not go back to smoking. That cigarette cost him his quit. He was lucky. 11 months later, he was able to get off again. Some people are not that lucky. Some people don't muster up the strength. Some people don't get the desire again. And the absolute worst, some people do not get the opportunity again to quit smoking. Something goes wrong between the relapse and the day they were thinking they were going to quit. And sometimes that thing that goes wrong is a diagnosis of a terminal illness or sudden death. Again, these are effective measures to get people off smoking. If they die, they will not smoke. But it's not the symptom. It's not the warning. It's not the message that they were expecting and hoping for to get them off smoking. Cigarettes end up costing them their life. When you have a quit going, you need to understand, even if you didn't want to quit when you started, there will be benefits that will go along. You're saving your health without question. You're likely saving your life. And to keep these benefits, it's still a matter of understanding that one puff is going to throw that quit out the window. It either sets the precedent that you could have another one and not go back, at which point you will take another one, and maybe that one will hook you, maybe it won't, but it'll allow another one. And then sooner or later, one of them is going to take you down. And then you are a smoker again. Taking a puff after quitting means you're somewhere down the line. You're either going through smoking again or you're going through quitting again. And those are both lousy options. The way to keep the quit going that you have going now, to make it last forever, again, is to stick with a personal commitment on a day-by-day basis to never take another puff.